This season of Perf Bites is brought to you by Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. HPE has the expertise and solutions you need to transform your business or government and change the world. Learn more at hpe.com. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, accelerating next. And Flood.io. We sort out the infrastructure so you can spend more time testing. Flood.io is load testing simplified. Learn more at www.flood.io.
It's time for Perf Bites.
What the f*** is Perf Bites?
The fourth square meal of the day. Don't bogart the Perf Bites. F*** waffles. Microwave ready. Add nutritional value to your brain.
Right up, jackalope.
It's time for Perf Bites with your hosts, Mark Tomlinson, James Pulley, and Howard Chorney.
Perf Bites.
Whatever.
They have the same, very similar coloring.
Hey, we are here at Perf Bites at the end of Whopper, the workshop on performance and reliability.
Day two
in New Zealand, down under. I'm here with Tim Koopmans.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Tim.
Yeah, it's not a burger, by the way.
No.
A Whopper.
No, not spelled completely. There's no H. Or two.
The way you say it sounds like a burger.
And you can't get it your way. You just have to take it how Whopper is delivered.
And my favorite Austrian joining the show. Andy Grabner.
Hi. Thanks. It's a long day, huh?
What did I do?
Well, you invited me, right?
Yeah.
To speak, to say something in my Austrian Boston. Boston?
Austrian.
Boston accent, yeah.
Boston, Austrian?
Yeah, Boston.
Yes, and
that's Otto.
First timer.
Yes, introduce yourself. You have a very interesting last name.
Vanna Moya.
Very good. Yes. And not a native of New Zealand, but you're here in New Zealand now.
Yes, I live here now for 2 years now. Been in the U.S., so that might explain the accent a little bit.
Yes.
But yes, trying to switch that a little bit into to Kiwify it a little bit.
Kiwify.
Can you give us a demo?
Are you working on your Kiwi accent? Sand?
Like they say. Oh, no, that's Australian. No, bro.
That's awesome. And tried and true, James Pulley.
Hey.
Yes. Now, both of you, this is your first Whopper.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's Tim's first Whopper.
Yes, my first Whopper.
What do you guys, this is day two. We had, Tim was on day one before. Who else was new on day one with us? I don't know, maybe Scott. Yeah. Yeah, Scott was at first.
To look at the video, we have the video proof.
We do have a video proof. Yeah. James.
Yes.
Your first day two, first Whopper. Wrap it up. How is it, by the way, your brain? How doing?
Mm-hmm. My brain is on Jell-O. I think there's a song like that. But that's like
there's always room for Jell-O.
There's like a chorus. You know, my brain is Jell-O or something like that.
No, he just made it.
Yeah,
he just made it.
It's a lot of information to take in. Very, very different than other conferences that we all have attended, which are mostly broadcast style events.
Yeah.
I stand up in front, I get terrified, I sweat in awkward places, and I talk to the audience.
Yes.
Here, the audience gets terrified and sweats in awkward places.
Yeah.
Because they're on task, so to speak.
Yep.
Now, Mark, you had a presentation today where you covered where you've been working for the last 4 years.
By the way, Richard Leach is here with more beers.
Yes.
So these are essential podcast ingredients.
Yeah.
I'm liking the red. I had that last time.
I brought one of these. I'm not sure.
Brother, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Mark, you had your presentation today where you covered where you've been working for the last four and a half, 5 years. And, even though, we've been podcasting together for that period of time, and I've known you for that period of time,
yes,
it was eye-opening some of the things that you were going through,
yes.
And it actually made sense for some of the awkward emails and phone conversations that we've had over the last...
And just when I would just spontaneously burst into tears?
There was that awkward moment at Spring STP Con years ago where you were crying.
Yeah, he's just crying uncontrollably. So I needed a group hug to put myself back together.
It was really awkward.
Yeah,
I wouldn't really call this a conference, though.
No.
Yeah.
In that way.
Yeah.
There is conferring, but you're right.
But it's very, like, I've never been to a workshop like this.
Yeah.
Like you said, the onus is put back onto the audience.
Yeah.
It's not like humble bragging rights. It's more about what your experience is and, you know, what went wrong, and then turning to the audience to, you know, come up with a solution. That's what I really, I think it's really.
Again,
like everybody has said, it's been a very, very different experience just because it's a very collaborative, you're kind of like sharing knowledge. It's almost like having a conversation with your peers, only some of them are way smarter than you.
Isn't that nuts? Like, sometimes, like, you've been the only super guru smart guy on a gig, maybe, you know, like that. We hired the expert, you know, and then you think, wow, if you're in that role a while, you're like, wow, I really am the expert. And then you come to a conference like this, and it's like, I am totally humbled by the people around me who just learn to the same thing in different ways or different things in the same ways.
I think the difference here is, if you think about a regular conference, at the end of a presentation, people typically line up the speaker, but they only have like 5 to 10 minutes because the next speaker is coming in. And here, the difference is you have 5 to 10 minutes of an ER report, and then you have the rest of the time where you actually hear what others say, and then that it becomes an active conversation where everybody chimes in. I think that's the cool thing.
Yeah. And the rules work really well too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably a bit hard to explain for the podcast, but
we can try to explain it. How do you take the card system, the loss
facilitation? Yeah. I think it's worked great because, again, I think I got called out a couple of times because I would just start yelling to have something to say. But I think to just have it controlled and have, you know, a specific topic or a specific question addressed, and then pick up a second one and exhaust that, that works.
And the other thing I'll say on that, having been to a few whoppers, is it's really hard to do that facilitation. I've tried. After one of my first whoppers, I came back and I did the colored cards in an internal workshop, and doing the facilitation is hard.
Yeah.
I lost track of the threads, and
I thought the colors were a little confusing because I just came from Las Vegas and there's a Brazilian steakhouse there and that uses red and green.
Totally different.
And I thought we were going to have someone coming around with a giant sword with food on it.
Yeah, pork,
lamb. Yeah, yeah.
What's the is it rebel card? What was that?
So the K card is actually was married. It was named after
Paul's wife. Came up with the idea.
Came up with
her
idea.
Name. Her initial is K.
Initial K. Okay. But the conference style is called LOST. The Los Altos Workshop
on Software.
Testing was the first one where they did this. And if you think about how, actually now when you look at the way threads are moderated in, well, a little bit in Facebook, or, you know, if you ever look in some of the way that a thread goes in email or online forums, it's like we're kind of doing that same thing interactively, following a branch, a tangent, and it has a life. The main thread has its life, and it can tangent. You get a tangent on a tangent. I think we had a couple of recursive things.
Yeah,
where
it's like
I replied to you, and you replied to me, and I replied to you, and you replied to me. And
I think that's a perfect description of it.
It's wild.
Yeah.
At first, I remember I was kind of uncomfortable with it. Because I've been in so many of these other settings where it's not moderated that way.
Yeah.
And now I quite like it. Actually.
Would it be a cool idea as an extension to Slack or maybe a new product that does it the exact same way? So you know you have a question, but you cannot yet ask it. You want to first make sure that the group itself all agree that we're done with a certain subthread.
We need
we need an online tool for that.
We need a K-card lost style add-in to chats.
Yeah, because right now I'm overwhelmed with Slack, with so many different channels, and everybody's like posting here, here, here.
Yeah.
This is much more facilitated because we focus on one thread and we all agree it's done, and then we go back to something else.
Right.
You could create a subreddit. I think, like, Reddit structure is very similar to what is going to
happen. The structure, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, like, people reply to threads, you know, within a comment. But then each, you know, main line is like,
But the difference here is I'm not allowed to post my new question on a different thread until the current thread is totally closed.
You
right?
can't distract.
Yeah, I cannot distract. Yeah, we all focus on one thing and then we go to the next.
Yeah. And then there's some magic in that too, I think, because like I might think I don't have anything to say, and then your comment on your thread makes me go, oh, wait a minute, I have to reply to you.
Yeah.
That is Right.
That's the same dynamic as why all the good ideas on projects happen in the tea room.
Exactly.
You know, it's when you're talking to somebody that's not in your direct team, and they make a sort of comment that's tangential to what you're thinking about, and it sparks a thought. And that's the dynamic that's going on.
Which makes it, to your point, Tim, it makes it a workshop. It's almost like you're having to work throughout the day. And to your and James, the brain... in Europe, you're an intellectually capable human being, and your brain's
jello.
A little jello. A little jello.
And I think, too, one of the other great things about just the Whopper setting is everybody is in the same field. Because unlike the other conferences, it could be just one presentation that is relevant to anything that you're interested in. But I think everything that was covered today and yesterday is about the same pain points, the same wins, and the same struggles that we all go through.
Because right here in this room, if we say, you know, God, I really hate transport level correlation, everyone in the room goes,
everyone's
Richard's created an entire amazing product that can go after this. Let's talk about Whopper Day 2. I'll just say again how thankful I am to have redeemed myself from the world's shittiest ER the first time I did it. I had no freaking clue what I was doing. But I quite liked all the other ones. I mean, no matter the unfair criticism that you got, Richard, but they're still perfectly good. They as long as they related to each other, which they did, it worked for me.
That was about not fitting exactly the mold of classically how Whopper ERs are done. And you know, I had debates with Steve about it.
What's your highlights from today? What do you think?
Oh, like I said, I mentioned before, like one of the biggest highlights was just the difference in how things run in New Zealand versus other parts of the world.
Elaborate on that. I mean, I just witnessed it, but...
It's Windows.
Well, no, but I get that. But, I mean, elaborate it. It's part of a culture or the mindset?
It's a little bit of either, technical... I don't want to call it technical debt, but things have been done a certain way from a long time ago, and it's very and a lot of the technologies are embedded in that old system, monolithic giant stuff that is all vendor based.
Gotta have a bus.
Yeah.
Gotta have a data source.
Yeah.
Gotta have a input output. Gotta have a transformation.
And
but core architectural staleness. I don't want to staleness is too negative. It's just like a very standard kind of way to put a system together.
Yeah, so there's all these pieces in this puzzle, and it's all owned and managed by completely different vendors, and, you know, so it is hard, and there's not enough knowledge in-house. None of it was built in-house, so you're relying a lot on third parties to support or to upgrade or to do all these things, and for all these tools to play well together, which we all know never really actually turns out to be good. And then like some really, really old technology, right?
Sure.
So,
but
IT
departments in Philadelphia have the same problem. It's like
20
years ago.
That's what I was thinking. This would be a global thing. Like, I like to think it's a global problem.
Yeah.
I mean, all the stories today, if you took like five test consultants from, say, Melbourne or Sydney, the top end of town working in finance or insurance or telcos, they'd all come up with similar sort of war stories, like, you know, this crazy sort of integrated, you know, systems within systems that you're then tasked to test, and like you've got some awful things to deal with, like ODBC, like crazy, or, you know, like,
ODBC.
But, you know, just like a bit more difficult than, say, you know, a very simple HTTP web app.
But that's my point at the start when I talked about the context. It was in the context of a consulting assignment. Typically, the customers that get external consultants in are the customers who haven't got the capability to do it themselves.
Sure, of course.
And the difference between hearing... yourself speaking, Mark, and Garanka speaking, for example, they're talking about big development shops.
Even Pierce.
Yes,
as well.
Oh, Pierce, yeah.
Yeah.
Development shop, full control over the architecture. The organization has control, probably a lot of consistency, probably recent architecture.
Okay.
Whereas a lot of the consulting gigs that we get, and partly the reason that you have the perception of New Zealand's like this is that most of the New Zealand people who have spoken here have either been current or past employees of ours doing consulting services work.
Right.
And a lot of our gigs are in implementations of commercial off-the-shelf packages being integrated with legacy systems.
Just the nature of your business.
And it's just saying, is this going to work when integrated with those things on our infrastructure? It's not saying every check-in, see if I've broken the code.
I will say
You
are blessed to a degree because you don't have programmers from ticketing companies from the UK here crashing your site. So
again, all hugs go out to the people in the UK ticketing, Ticketmaster UK.
Yes,
We want to send you virtual hugs for sucking so bad.
What happened?
Every show?
Okay.
Every News of the Damned?
Yeah,
and once again,
was
we go
something
back.
Recent then?
Yeah. No, no,
of
no.
Of course
no,
there was, even if we don't know about it. I'm sure there was. I'm sure.
I'll go find one.
Yeah,
I'm
sure give me 5 minutes.
Yeah. Book a ticket and take the site down.
That's right. But is there anything to you guys, both from New Zealand, is there something to... What is New Zealand IT culture outside of these systems or vendors or such? Is there kind of a different spirit to how you guys work and the network?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're probably better place to talk because it's 30 years since I left the UK.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I haven't really worked overseas much in the last 30 years. So.
Yes, there are some subtle differences, but then there's like really big ones that are very noticeable. So for me, it was different coming from like a developer shop into consulting. So I think a lot of technology type services are outsourced to consultants like myself, and then that pretty much stifles innovation because you're in to do a job. Nobody's paying you to come and play with cool toys or whatever. You're just there to deliver, right? So then that, you know, in some ways that kind of changes the way you work and the way you think and the way you grow or innovate. And then secondly, again, going back to traditional ways of doing things because things were locked down 20 years ago, and then trying to, you know, come in and change the whole process and trying to kind of like make the switch. I know that's a global problem, but it seems like, you know, it's a lot more difficult, I found, here than any place that I've been. Where I think, I'm not sure if it's cultural or even maybe just the delivery of the message.
Have you been a consultant outside of here?
No.
So I think it's a shift. Yeah, I think it's, but then it's a little hard to say, is it New Zealandish or is it because you're not a consultant?
Yeah,
I think it's
a mesh of
development shop versus consulting.
That's a big thing.
That was that context slide that I put in. That was the light bulb that came on for me at lunchtime.
You know, Dana, the. It's also really, really tough to do your job when you're not allowed to right-click in your computer.
That is very, very difficult.
That,
And I think C drive is key. Like everybody
access
needs
to
access
the local
to C drive. Yeah, just any drive that is not the desktop.
That's what
that would help.
Rootkits are for, though. Like you've got a CD-ROM.
I'm going to admit. I got dismissed from a consulting gig. Because I was just trying to do my job, and I didn't really know why I didn't have access, so I thought it was me, and I kept trying things until they came to my desk, and they're like, get your stuff. And literally, I was like, what?
What did I do?
We caught you trying to hack into it? I thought I was supposed to be able to get in. I thought I was doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And I got escorted out of the building. I got free lunch that day.
Lockdown desktops I've had, you know, lockdown... No USB devices, no command prompt, no C drive access, no installing anything.
Limited menus and stuff.
But a lot of the tools don't do themselves favors. I think someone called it out today, maybe, where you've got to go to ops and say, oh, can I have local admin
for this
Perth
tool.
User, for SiteScope, whatever it's called.
Network.
So, like really? You need local admin to... You know, I mean, I guess some things you probably.
Well,
do,
I noticed that a lot of the PC Magazine reviewers, they will not give best of breed to any package that requires admin access on Windows at this point.
That could be. Richard, you.
I just had my favorite story about sort of finding a way around a lockdown desktop problem that was preventing something which was going to cause. We had a situation where. When the screensaver cut in, it was causing something that was left running to crash. And this something that was running had to finish before the next morning in order for a production deployment of a major government system to go in. And we had to find a way of turning off the screensaver, but it was locked down, desktop locked down, you couldn't get at the registry. And the solution we came up with, which I'm so proud of, we got a desk fan, and one of those desk fans that swings from side to side.
Oscillating desk.
Yep. And we got a paper a bulldog clip, and we clipped the mouse cable to the desk fan and sat it on a book and then walked the mouse up and down.
Dragging it back.
Stop the screensaver from kicking in all night.
Listen, Richard, I have a question. Was it one of these 3D screensavers, like pipes and stuff like that?
No, it was a...
It didn't come up for hours.
Because I had that exact same problem happen at a customer where it was an all-Windows environment, and their technicians loved the pipe screensaver. You may remember it, this 3D pipes. But you know what? That's very CPU intensive.
Oh, very.
I don't know. I can't remember.
And so there's only a finite amount of CPU in a box if you've got to process something overnight, and as soon as the pipe screensaver kicks in, performance and response time go in the crapper.
Well, it actually crashed. The application was crashing as soon as this. We actually left a note on the fan to the cleaner saying, do not turn off, mouse being exercised.
Yeah.
It's still going.
That's in process.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we going to kick into some advanced
solutions to problem?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, other highlights from the day. Richard, what are you thinking? You've got a lot of conversation going on the correlation thing.
Yeah. No, it's cool to get that stuff, because we've sweated blood over the tool that we've developed over the last few years. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, we think we've solved a hard problem. We think we've got a good solution to that. So it's really good to hear the feedback. We're very conscious of the fact we've got a Windows-based solution, a Microsoft.NET-based solution to this problem. You're right, it would be really cool to have an open solution.
Portable, open.
And Mark, you gave us that feedback the other day when we were talking.
Yeah, even thought there could be a way, since you've already invested sort of in your own proxying capabilities and expanding that way.
Yep.
Why wouldn't that live in the cloud?
Yeah, wow. I mean,
why wouldn't it be a Eclipse plugin just like it's a Visual Studio?
Yeah. I mean,
just put it into backlog.
Absolutely. We've got 80 backlog items on the wall. It's really good, and it's really good to hear feedback from smart people who get what we're doing, rather than it falling on completely deaf ears. Because very often when we're talking about the problem that we're solving, people don't realize that it's a solvable problem.
Yeah.
And the only people who realize what the problem we're solving is going to mean are the people who are going to lose work because, consulting, contracting, contractors who aren't going to be needed, because you don't need 6 people to do this stuff for 2 months when you can click the button and it does it for you. I suppose we need to be talking more to the people paying the bill rather than the people doing the work.
Tim, I wanted to ask you as well, as somebody who's building products, and you are sort of a technical product owner yourself in the flood world. We did the exercise. Do you want to describe the exercise we did in the middle of the day?
Which one was
the
that?
Tool exercise? You remember? You don't remember what you did in the middle of the day?
Yeah. The wish list.
We did something?
Yeah,
didn't you take your camera and go and
your brain is just draining out of one
leg. I'd like to think that's all on my roadmap. There's literally five pages.
There's about 80 items.
I think the question was, what would be in your ideal performance engineering
performance testing tool, not necessarily just load tests.
And we quickly went from generating scripts through to like spotting outliers through to I think we had a panic button to stop and take a thread dump of the world kind of thing.
Was there a favorite one?
We didn't cover expert mode. That was one
expert
that was
mode. Yeah, I think yeah. Look, I actually think a lot of the wish list is valid. I know from developing a product how hard it is to sort of schedule something and figure out when you're gonna actually
break it down, let alone
like the technical detail behind implementing it.
Trying
to prioritize 80 items for myself, I think it was just pleasing to sort of see some of the things on there. I was like, yep, that's on our roadmap. Yeah, we've been thinking about that, but it doesn't give me any confidence that we're on the right mark because
we do a few of them already.
Sure.
As you say, prioritizing, and we've got hundreds of things on our backlog.
Right? Yeah,
and it's prioritizing them. What's really going to, for us, it's what's going to make the difference about people buying the product.
Yeah,
you've been a product manager, Mark. You'd know that it's not what makes the most difference to the people who've already got the tool. It's what makes difference to getting new sales.
Yeah, and it has to be a driver. Greg said that, and it's very true. Like, but I guess you're saying it in a negative way. You know that like tool vendors should just be trying to please the customer, you know, satisfy the customer's requirements first, and then worry about profit later. But I guess you still have to balance
development
time and
we've got to pay for
maintaining it,
pay for dinner somehow.
Yeah, so you have to, you still have to balance it against the realities of finance.
I think there's to that point, Richard. Also, you know, as a devil's advocate, Satan again makes an appearance on Perfbytes.
Yep.
As a devil's advocate, you could also just decide for this product, our strategy is to leverage the install base. Because we know the biggest opportunity will be either an upgrade scenario or while we've been waiting for version 3 and it's been kind of dormant for a while and I want to see, you know, that it just depends. It's not always grow.
Sure.
And it just, each product is slightly different the way you would do that. But yeah, 80 items on a backlog, I'm guaranteed to get 2. I got to pick the 2 that, like, will accelerate my current customer to be happy enough to recommend it to a non-customer, and all you need is 1 plus 1, and
two more.
Yes, James once again put the Age of Empires render on the tool.
That was
one of,
for sure.
Yes, I want the game rendering.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of tomorrow's ERs, if we get to it, somebody will be talking about something they've been developing, which actually ticks about 5 of those off.
Oh,
that's great.
Does, you know, things like dynamically changing tests on the fly during a test.
Yeah.
You know, dropping in.
Yeah, absolutely. Andy,
there was one. I think we had another product that year outside of performance testing. It was the service virtualization as a service.
Yes.
Meaning the Salesforce identity service.
Well,
I think the
credit cards. Credit bureaus,
yeah.
Essentially anyone that's got a external paid-for interface these days.
Yeah, and just to describe it at a high level, one of them is just like, I'm Salesforce, and my API, you can pay as a customer to do one-off functional tests.
Mm-hmm.
But if I say, hey, Salesforce, I want to run a 200 transactions per second load test, they're like, no.
$50,000.
And you try to do it, and it doesn't scale.
Yep.
And that's the suggestion that Andy's describing. The idea was, Why doesn't a service virtualization vendor, ITKOs, Parasoft we talked about, HP has a product, why don't they partner up with a Salesforce, with a bureau, with one of these things and say, hey, well, we'll give you our platform, and then you could go to market, maybe together, white label, to go to customers and say, well, you can use the real sandbox environment from our service to do your functional testing, but we'll actually, you know, sell you a product, or maybe it's leasing the product and they'll maintain it. And I think that would work. And we'll put it right in your load test lab and open up a tunnel and we'll maintain it and we'll have a local service relay or responder simulator.
I suggest they should just say something like salesforce.parasoft.com, and that's the API that you can use. So you just point your app to their virtualized URL. And then you just pay for, I don't know,
But especially on some of these, as you can imagine, regulated environments, you're not allowed to push even some of your test data accidentally out to those accounts.
That's a good point,
So you might want to have a local instance or hybrid. So if it was, you can elastic simulators.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the way I would refer to
it. I mean, in my experience, like using service virtualization, just rolling my own stubs, I guess, or smart stubs. It requires like a lot of domain knowledge, and so every time someone comes and says, "Oh, we can just put this proxy in, and it will learn, and it's going to automatically parameterize all the time date stats, blah blah blah," and you're like, "Oh yeah, cool." And
but especially when it's authentication,
it's
and
like
stuff.
20% of the way there,
then
you need someone with like expert domain knowledge to go, "This is how it all actually works." You know, this
inside
call's got to be
the real.
Yeah, this call's got to be made before that call, and like, so I think that's where the cost goes up.
There'll be deliberate encryption and authentication. You know, they don't want to expose how that works.
Yeah, or it's just unintentionally complex.
Well, it's either unintentionally or deliberately complex.
Yeah. I think that's what would be the challenge with doing like a SaaS, like sitting as an external SaaS provider of a virtualization service. Like you'd still, it'd be a lot of effort, but the payoff might be there, you know.
Your idea of partnering with the, you know, the real
service provider.
The real service provider knows how it works. Mm-hmm. And it's them providing the knowledge or a little bit of code into a platform which scales and
I think the offer to let's say Salesforce or another credit card virtual credit card responder, credit verification checks, things like that, to them the heavy lifting is gone. It's like, all right, you're giving me the framework. I save money on my engineer's time. Maybe it's even part of their testing team. They're like, oh, well, the rules have changed for this release. You could push the rules in an update out to everyone using version 1.2.3 of the simulator.
What did Salesforce gain from this? You know, they made it easier for customers using Salesforce to test.
But
what is Salesforce?
But it's less painful. It's less dissatisfied customers because they've had unsuccessful implementations.
I think it would lower the risk for Salesforce.
Yes, exactly.
And also, Salesforce becomes more interesting for people that want to build a software integrate with them versus with an alternative vendor.
I guess my own experience with not Salesforce in particular, but just anyone that provides a sandbox that you can test against is generally being pretty poor. You know, like they'll have different ciphers for SSL to production. Yeah. And, it doesn't scale. It's like the API versions are different. You know, like it just seems like a real headache. And I get that it would be a better for your customers to provide a really solid sandbox. But and then on the other hand, you could say, well, isn't the money better spent just making sure that your production infrastructure is up to speed?
Let's think about this. Let's take a credit card provider like Visa. Yeah. How difficult would it be to basically accept a request and then based upon the last two digits, it's either going to be success, fail, take credit card,
decline,
out of date, basically you got a two-digit code on the last, and they'll just take any number and just say, okay, you need to hold it for the maximum out-of-spec tolerance for the SLA.
If it's that simple, you do it yourself generally. Like you just run Node.js and a little HTTP server. But ultimately it just snowballs into something more complex. And especially
a full-time job.
Yeah, especially if you've got chained transactions, so this one depends on the next one, which you got to get down the chain, and that's where the complexity sort of I think really escalates, because it's beyond just a simple OAuth endpoint or a simple validating a credit card kind of endpoint. It becomes like
you'd be surprised what goes out of a terminal when you swipe and what comes back. It's not that sophisticated.
Maybe that's not the problem, that service virtualization is trying to cover is all I'm saying. Because, like I said, you could just stub that yourself if you wanted to.
All right.
Yep.
I can't stand service virtualization myself.
I just haven't seen it done properly. Like,
even when it's done properly,
that, and there's one vendor that treats that whole thing as a Trojan horse.
Yeah, sort of. That's kind of.
Yeah,
Richard. There's probably correlation on the back end to a simulator, potentially.
100%.
There is. I think it's... I was just talking to... who works in that space. I think it's actually much simpler correlation, generally.
Yeah, could be.
Because it's well-defined interfaces. You know, everything I've seen in that service virtualization space, it's XML or JSON.
Simple tokens.
Yeah, it's a well-defined interface and it's stable.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like
client
the crap that gets sent back from the browser that changes every time the wind changes or the sun comes out. You know,
and the wind, speaking of Wellington.
Yes.
Diane, what else do you remember from the board, the brainstorming tool thing?
Well, I was stuck on the avatar, so...
The whole time? That was it?
No.
Do you remember? Nothing? Your brain? Jello.
Jello, yeah. Processing.
Yeah.
I'll get back to you.
That's good. Andy, you already said your thing. We have the other Andy who's here kind of in the background. Mm-hmm. Have any favorites off the board that you remember? He's going to go look at it.
As Andy goes, as he steps out of the room,
exactly.
To take into is his view. He's looking at the board. He's looking at each of the pages.
And it's like 80 items.
What is the item that stands out?
Last time Mr. Hunter spent time, I think he used a 3-iron on this course. And there is a slight breeze in the room. Mm-hmm. He's lining up the shot. And I think...
Up. He's taking a swing.
He's taking a swing.
There he goes.
Back.
Up.
Not fully
no,
decided.
Hesitated.
Well, now I'm going to be even slower.
I believe James, the crowd has disrupted him, and now we probably need to wait a few minutes.
Well, I found one while we're waiting.
Dang, go for it.
Yeah. So the way it was mentioned was like a chaos monkey simulation type thing, kind of like a latency introduction into. Because right now there's different solutions out there, and if you're trying to simulate that, it's either a lot of configuration changes.
Was that the noisemaker one?
Yeah.
Noisemakers.
Yeah. And it's a concept that I think a lot of even non-New Zealand companies were terrified of, because they're like, well, you're just going to shut down machines or you're going to make things difficult. But then if it's in a controlled environment, if you have a perf environment and you're
pristine,
able to simulate
the weather
that,
is always nice, the data is always pure.
Which is not realistic.
It's production is dirty, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nasty.
It's too bad a lot of vendors don't provide in BIOS a way to cut down some of those resources.
Yeah.
They do from a RAM perspective, but rarely can you cut CPU by a specific percentage or go to the network interface and say cut it to X percentage with this amount of defect and error.
Yeah, I want to mention I think it's Netflix Chaos Monkey.
Yeah.
But there's and I'm pretty sure it's all free open source is Pumba.
Yeah, you mentioned this before. What
so it's for Docker. It's
how's that spelled?
It's P U M B A.
P U M B A.
Yeah, but if you just look up Pumba, it won't, you know, it's going to get weird stuff.
Yeah.
So if you look up Pumba Docker, you'll probably get what I'm talking about.
Yeah, don't go through the
end. Yeah, it's really cool. Like
when I go searching for information on Unix commands at Man Pages. Man Pages is not what I was looking for at all. Not that there's anything wrong with it.
I think there was a conversation last night involving someone looking for German sausages to buy.
Yeah.
And it was...
right. Wiener.
Anyway, Pumba is really cool. So it operates at Docker. You pass it the Docker socket so that it can control other Docker containers in the network.
Cool.
And then it's got options like with NetM, so it can introduce delay and packet loss, jitter, that sort of thing
between
other running containers. And it can also terminate containers altogether. Mm-hmm. So that really got my mind thinking. I think that's really good in today's land of orchestration outside of Facebook.
And this,
you don't use Docker.
It runs outside of your...
It's just another Docker container. So
you could compose it. If you did a Docker compose,
you can just do it locally if you want. It's really easy. And you can give it a regular expression to say, only operate on these type of containers, or you can pass it the IDs that you want it to operate on.
So every container test network of containers should have one of these in there.
Yeah, I think it's great for DR. It's great for performance in a way because
it's also for microservice environments, right?
Yeah.
You want to test how are they feeling over the load balancing.
See what happens,
it's
really cool.
Awesome. I like that.
Shall we ask the other Andy?
Did you have a favorite?
I liked the dynamic load control.
So the ability to turn it to 11.
Mm-hmm.
While it's running,
adjust how much load you're doing.
Turn it up till it breaks. Turn it back and see how it recovers. We've done that quite a lot in custom harnesses, and it's a really valuable, thing to be able to turn it up to breaking point, and then turn it down and see if it recovers. Predicting when it's going to break and doing a predefined schedule, a ramp up profile that's going to ramp down again.
Yeah.
If you don't get quite the right break point.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to Sosta in this case. Sosta has that capability today.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sure.
Interpreting it as being able to adjust what the load, I've got a bunch of people logging in, now I need to adjust.
Mix
and match your scenarios.
Yeah, we've done that exactly. That. We used to have a control for each. Each aspect of the workload, so you could dial them up and down and change the workload mix.
Yeah.
This is a different type of tuning, though, right? This is not repeatable tests.
This is exploratory testing.
Wait a minute.
But that can let you home in quickly on what you want to, where you need to focus.
Yeah. I will say there is a precedence, and this would shout out to Cloud Test. In the right here, I have Cubase, which is a sequencing system, mixing audio production, and the automation Like if I actually hit the record button on a track, and then as we're recording or something, and I move the fader up, and I move mm-hmm. the pan, and I move the reverb, it's actually recording those motions. Mm-hmm. So you would be able to repeat the scenario of the load test that you just kind of doctored up manually, and say, wait a minute, go back and do that. Whatever I did manually in my dynamic control, do the same thing.
You mentioned as an item replay.
I saw
replay as, hey, I just want to take this test that was executed, give it to someone else with the result set, and have them be able to watch it.
Yeah, visualize the results like in real time.
Yeah.
Or possibly...
Yeah.
But, accelerated real time.
Yeah, like listening to this podcast, some people listen at 1.5 speed.
Yeah.
We sound like chipmunks, so everyone...
Let's talk really slow, and then we'll...
You can't do that very long.
Yeah. People look at you really weird, right?
Yeah. We typically do that for U.S. training videos, because we... It has to go at brain speed, yeah.
Touché, Kiwi friends.
One thing I learned from theater, the way you get a good Southern accent is you just slow down a British. And you get a good Southern accent.
Oh. Yeah.
So with the replay, we do this in Dynatrace, where we have the problem evolution. You can actually replay how the problem evolved.
Yeah.
And actually all the coded images.
It shows, I remember, it's kind of like the architecture diagram or the transaction.
So you basically see which component is failing at which point throughout the problem evolution.
Red, and green.
Yeah.
So why do you do it though? Like why do you want to replay it as opposed to just zoning into a particular point in time?
So here I'm in a situation, maybe I'm doing a manual dynamic control of a scenario and something happens, right? And I know it takes an hour and a half to reset the data, it takes another 15 minutes, and of course in that time I have to eat and I have to pee.
The developer who is in charge of that area is not on call, and they're at home asleep at 2 in the morning.
And they don't believe you anyway. So it's like, honestly, the easiest way to do it is just do a screen recording, right? And just say, look at the recording. This thing really did this. I'm not lying.
Camtasia is your friend.
Yeah. It's just, if you maybe got, what's this? Jing is one that does the famous, they have the screen recording. It's the TechSmith Jing. The other one is Snagit. That's one way, but I'm like, put it in the tool. Don't mess with my, I don't need high-res HD screen res. I just record kind of what the different things were happening.
I thought that was a really good idea, basically to take the results
sort of
set
virtually
and just
replay
be able
it.
To replay the entire test. You could have a slider, you can just slide to the area where you're interested in, watch
very,
it.
Very similar to what
But now, if it still in contrast to that, what's the difference between this and looking at just the charts at a particular point in time?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Assuming you have those charts.
Of course. Yeah. But if you have the load testing report and you have all the metrics.
Well, I think we've proven through our immensely deep conversation about developer engineers for product companies not understanding load testing tools so much that they put fantastic amounts of dynamic values within the payloads to the client and screw everything up, and then Richard has to build a massive tool. They're the same engineers that, like, I don't know what your tool does. I would, and maybe they won't come and sit at your desktop and watch your load testing tool, which has fantastical things happening in it.
Yeah.
I would just like to share that experience, maybe in a very, I've got your attention, here's the problem, and granted I send you a log or I send you a stack trace, a problem isolation piece. Just kind of see my world.
Yeah.
And do you see what I see? It's like, I know what you see.
No, and it's also nicer to consume a video strip, right? It shows quickly how the problem evolved. Yeah. I mean, it's easier to consume.
I could see Mr. Koopman's mind going to work and saying, I can spin that out to YouTube, and I can mark it with their customer ID and make it private, and they can watch it all day long.
Yeah,
I'm still not sold, but I'm thinking, sometimes when we're testing, and, for a set configuration or whatever, and you notice things are going wrong, I really wish at that point you could just start to ramp up verbosity. Like, things are going wrong. I think Facebook had that example where they start taking, thread dumps. It'd be great if you could sort of control that as the pilot, say, things are looking off.
start.
Let's get more information. Yeah, get more information so that we can go back and debug it. Because I often find that you don't have enough information, even if you had a replay or you just had like a time zone. You go back and I don't have enough info.
I'd love to just have Log4j be able to switch logging modes.
Yeah, just change the log level. Yeah.
But what if you do this? I mean, you can combine this in a load testing tool. If you see the error rate going up, you just fire a REST call to change the log level on your application server.
Yeah.
It should be doable.
Yeah, I don't know. Can you do that on a running JVM though? Like,
of course. Yeah. Well, you can change the parameters on the fly.
Okay.
Because it's all controlled for properties.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Assuming you have the credentials to do
so.
Of course. Yeah.
Richard, you were thinking. I was just going to say there's a feature in Visual Studio which came about from Whopper 9, from a conversation where. One of the things which you often want to know when you have a failure in a load test is what happened 3 pages ago.
Yeah.
So at the time,
what
Visual Studio used to do was it would dump the details of the full details of the request and the response where it first detected the error.
Yeah.
We said, no, we want to be able to see everything that led up to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, lots of debate. Ed Glass was the product manager at the time.
Absolutely.
We persuaded him. And so now what Visual Studio does, optionally, is when you get a failure, it logs everything that's happened for that test case for that, you know.
It's same what we call this true log on error.
Yeah, exactly.
Same. So it's like a sliding 5-minute buffer.
Or it's, you know, one iteration of your loop.
You have 5 to 10 pages back, so you have the full sequence.
If I made it all the way through an iteration without tripping an exception, you'd actually
throw it away
and do the next one.
It's huge. If you turn that up too aggressively, or because the other thing we requested at that Whopper was the ability to take that full sample for one in N tests, so you'd actually got the full logging of a successful one under load.
Yeah.
But if you do too much of that, the terabyte counter ticks up on your results database.
Which is a good segue to the ER that we won't name the product, but there was an ER today about profiling, the impact of profiling on the application under test or under the system. It's a production system.
Yeah. The recursive overhead anti-pattern.
Of get trace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Get stack trace. Gets a stack trace. And if you have an exception in the get stack trace, get stack trace function, you'll get another stack trace.
Yeah. In fact, there are a few examples
today. The room starts to spin and you get sucked down into a paradox and you're done.
Yeah. It was like, who profiles the profiler? That's what I learned from that.
Dude.
Yes. What is the base state without the profiler installed?
Exactly. Yeah. In this ER, I think the problem was they didn't have a testing environment where they could actually test out the tool.
Sure.
But the overhead is they had to go direct into production.
Yeah, exactly. All right. We'll be looking forward to Whopper number day 3.
Yes.
Our alarm's going off when it's turned off.
Yeah, so, because they think we're criminals, which we are, right, James?
Yeah, kind of.
We're Americans.
Yeah, we are. We're in a foreign land.
Yeah.
Being left in. You're ready for, Ben, you ready for day 3?
Yes, I'm excited.
Yeah?
Sadly, we have nothing going on after this that involves drinking a lot of alcohol, but then it's a good thing. Maybe I'm not invited.
Right.
That's fine.
But
that means fresh grains.
We have leftover lasagna. Actually, I think we have a whole tray of lasagna.
We have a lot of
load.
Beer and wine.
And
you have beer and wine.
And whiskey.
You like whiskey?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's a different kind of party.
And we can dance it off later.
Oh,
tonight is salsa again at 9. If you want.
Yeah, so Andy's going to head out
party.
Salsa at 9.
So yes, that will get me ready for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. What are you looking forward to tomorrow?
There's that Jell-O again.
Jell-O, see, very good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Tim,
exactly.
You haven't gone yet.
No.
I'm sure you've been sweating it out every single day. When are you going to be called?
Yeah, look, I'm not a massive fan of public speaking.
Yeah.
But
neither is he. You might not guess it. He's like
I'm with you, bro.
But you're on a podcast now with thousands of listeners from now.
It's different because
it's not your
familiar
first
faces
podcast.
My first. But, no, but I sort of, I won't sleep tonight. But I do look forward to, you know, sharing some stories from flight. I think it would be interesting. I hope it will be interesting. But you know, I think it's a different take on performance
and tools.
Because it's because I have to look at so many test plans and so many results.
Yeah.
So it's a different way of sort of looking at things. So hopefully, I can share that.
Awesome.
How many people have done your challenge? It's on the site.
It would be maybe like less than 20.
Yeah.
It's not that popular, but I mean, there's probably people that have tried and haven't told me. Funnily enough, like, what tends to happen is I'll get a whole bunch of people that have just completed it, and it makes me wonder.
Classroom exercise.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking. It's like there's three or four people. I'm like, where do these people come from?
It's
like
a class.
Yeah.
Well, I've never done it.
Trace the IP addresses.
I've never done it, but some of our guys downstairs all did it. Three of them all did it about the same time.
Yeah, I won't say what country, but it's sort of, you know, like, they're just all coming to Burst, and they're like, and they all look very similar. And yeah. I like it.
Let's do you know the URL? We'll shout out.
It's challenges.flood.io.
Challenges?
Yeah.
.flood.io. And there's a little bit of a tweak you do in the tool when you first get started, right? Don't you have to do a little switch? There's some instructions.
That's the other one, I think.
But that's the other one?
That might be Stuart's.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. On myloadtest.com. Assuming
that one. So you have to claim to be a load runner.
Oh,
you kind of have to.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Because you got like a I think I've got a requirement where you have to say I am not a robot.
That's what you do.
So I just give that away.
Well, no.
There's an instruction.
You get an instruction.
Well, that's bad if you actually are a robot.
Yeah.
Then you probably are lying.
I am not a robot. I am a robot. Yeah. I am a virtual user.
Exactly. But so challenges.flood.io.
Yeah.
And then
Stuart
Moncrief is myloadtest.com. And you can
I think if you just Google that, I know that.
But they're fun to do.
And it actually makes me wonder, why are the only two public challenges in the world from Melbourne, Australia?
Well, I got my idea from Stuart. You know, I thought it was such a good idea, we should do a clone.
Is it really it's just really boring down there? There's nothing.
No, Melbourne's a great city.
Yeah, Melbourne's great.
You know, my favorite thing about Melbourne is the flaming thing down on the canal where they kill all the birds. Kills all the birds, right?
Challengers.
Challengers.flood.io. And so I want to go to... Oh, we'll be in Melbourne next week, so we're going to come down and see the bird killing.
Sorry, I missed that.
What birds are we killing?
I think it's about
my mind is jello.
All right. Goodbye, everyone. I actually have to edit these podcasts. I got to get things put together here. I'm going to do that tonight. My copious free time.
Time for lasagna.
We could do some lasagna. Let's figure out what we want to do. Thanks, everyone, for joining us again. We'll maybe do a whopper wrap-up tomorrow. We'll have all 3 days.
From the beer tasting.
We could do from the beer tasting. Actually, you know what we should do? A shout-out to Stephen Janaway and Dan Ashby that are testing in the pub. Testing in the pub? You listen to this podcast? Okay. So they always go to the pub. And so we could bring the microphone and actually we could record it as a Whopper testing in the pub and then just send it to them and say, here's a free testing in the pub. We just happen to be in a pub.
Yeah. Perfect.
I think that sounds good. All right, we're signing off. Thank you, guys.
See you later.
Tim, Andy. Andy. There's two Andys. There's four Andys with a recursive thing. Richard, Diane, and Mr. Pulley.
Diana. I know.
Diane.
Very misleading.
No.
It's with the wine. It's Diane.
What?
Diana.
And if you've been drinking.
Hey.
Diane.
Good
evening, everybody.
Awesome.
Cool.
Look at the ball skill. Good.